welcome to Phil and Ted's Sexy Boomer Show. I'm Ted Bonnet.
I'm the legendary Phil Proctor. Or so they tell me.
In your own mind.
You bet. All right, I'm going to try to turn my volume up a little bit so that I can hear better. Oh, that didn't help at all. Good Lord.
How was your week?
I'm feeling pretty weak. Yesterday was tax day.
Ooh.
So do you notice I've lost about 37,500 pounds?
Yeah,
did you
I can see that? It looks great.
Yeah, feels better. That money was getting in the way of my life.
Yeah.
A lot.
Wow.
And the bank account was getting heavy, you know, so now I don't have any more of those worries. You know?
And it's going to a good cause.
Really?
Well, we'll see.
To be determined.
Yeah.
That's right.
We'll see.
But anyway, you got real people talking to you.
Yeah.
Not artificial intelligence.
Oh,
right?
Man.
We're going to talk about that today.
Oh, yeah. We're going to talk about
AI. We're not going to talk about it.
What?
We've got an AI system that we're just going to...
We just have them talk about it.
They'll talk about it.
They.
Right.
Yeah, the pronoun thing for AI is interesting.
Yeah, what is it?
It.
Oh, it's it?
Yeah.
Oh, so how's it doing?
I haven't seen an AI say him, her at the end of the, you know, I haven't heard that, you know, like a her,
so you
she.
Can't. Yeah, that's too bad. For instance, I switched my Siri to an Australian woman now.
Oh.
So I'm getting Australian accents for everything, you know.
Oh, very nice.
Make a legal U-turn, you know. Look out for the sheep. No, AI. Yeah. I love the fact that some people are saying it's the robot rebellion, you know, and they're going to destroy civilization.
Good luck
doing that.
Yeah. I was at the National Association of Broadcasters convention up in Las Vegas yesterday.
Yesterday.
The NAB. And it's my annual toy fair because it's thousands of exhibitors of every possible production device known to entertainment.
How long have you been going there?
I've been going 4 decades.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's almost 40 years.
Yes.
Wow.
And it's really interesting because it's almost an annual benchmark of progress and future.
That's right.
And I've seen it go up and down, like with the digital revolution in the late 90s.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was like, well, how are they going to stay relevant?
Boom,
how are they going to stay?
Boom, dot, bust.
Boy, they totally embraced it. I really have to give the NAB kudos because they have stayed open to the future and they lead it to this day. And now it's all about artificial intelligence.
Do you follow the moving yellow line from one exhibit to the other?
No, but you have a little bot in your app on your phone, and so you can map stuff. Because you have to. It's a massive, massive show.
Yeah.
So you really have to pre-plan. And then there are panel discussions you want to go to. But the overall thing that I found fascinating about it this year was just how AI, artificial intelligence, is being embraced on every level of technology, not just radio, not just television, but more importantly, the internet.
And medicine.
And, they don't cover that there.
Convention.
That's a whole nother convention. But the creator economy, which we always hear about, is really kind of exciting because what the creator economy is, which is, I believe, something $480 million a year business. And what is the creator economy? It's these individuals.
Frankenstein.
Who use their computers and their phones to create their own media, go outside of the system.
These are the influencers?
Influencers, yes. And they were speaking, and a lawyer spoke who just represents these mostly kids.
Yeah.
They're making 6- and 7-figure salaries.
Wow.
Doing their YouTubes, doing their TikToks. I mean, it's a big business.
Yes, it is.
And now the AI is enabling new technology. I saw a $30 for sale. It's a $30 sale item of a editing system that you can do on your iPad that's as good as what you would pay in the giant machines in the 90s for, $500 an hour. It's all on your laptop.
It's a studio in your laptop.
It's a studio on your iPad, essentially.
On your iPad.
And then you can just hit a button and say, automatically format that for the vertical TikTok look. And it just outputs it, spits it out, puts it up. So it's very easy to create content now. And you don't really need the huge networks. And the networks are feeling this. This was really funny. There was talk of there's a new wave movement like maybe new wave film, new wave music that we experienced back in the day. Now it's called the new wave YouTube movement. And what that is, the kids who...
We're waving goodbye to the old YouTube movement.
Well, you know, what's fascinating is that this frenetic, short-term, seeming to older people, inane video clips that...
I'm having a little trouble following what you're saying.
Yes. Well, these kids have grown up, and now they're 14 to 25 years old. And guess what? They're eschewing that aspect and going for long-form content. YouTube
really?
Is becoming long-form, and this new wave movement, which has been called by YouTube creators, is this effort to create more meaningful, long-form content, storytelling.
Be still my heart.
So they're really, and I asked the lawyer, I said, what do you mean? So they're all going for traditional media now?
Yeah.
It's like, yeah.
They're making short movies?
Or they're wanting to advance. They're wanting to progress and tell more mature, meaningful stories.
Oh, so, that's amazing.
And these silly videos, the cat videos and
so
stuff, they're fading in interest. I mean, it's a thing, you know.
So the 14-year-olds want to do some mature product. Right?
But I really want to do is direct.
I can't wait.
And so the technology, you see it growing with the users back and forth. So look for the new wave movement on YouTube, which is long-form storytelling
content.
That's
amazing. I have to say, my granddaughter, Audrey, is making short movies with her iPhone. And they're absolutely amazing. She's 12.
If you have an Apple store nearby, go online and set up an appointment for a demo of the Vision Pro. The Vision Pro is that headset.
It's an eye set?
It's spatial. It's the next thing, which is spatial computing, where you have this 3D immersive environment.
Now, what do they call those things? An eye set?
They call it Vision Pro now. Meta has their thing.
What do you call that rig you put over your eyes? Is there a name for that?
Vision Pro.
Oh, so it's just a brand name.
Vision Pro headset.
It's like Kleenex.
I'd imagine they hope so.
Hey!
Go to the Apple Store. They have a curated 30-minute introduction. They will size it to your head. You give them your glasses if you wear glasses.
Yeah.
They will scan your glasses and then put optical inserts in so that when you put it on, special to you, will have a clear vision without glasses.
Wow.
And you will see a new world of computing and where this is all going to go. It's very, really
what
very
exciting.
What
kind of adventures do you have in that world?
That was what got me on that thought was the iPhone 15 has a 3D video capability to shoot 3D movies.
Mm.
Yeah. And it's for Vision Pro. I mean, they're tying it together.
Yeah,
so
sure.
If you look at, you take this demo, you will see footage that you could take with a camera phone, with an iPhone 15.
In 3D.
And you will look at it, and you will think you're in the backyard with these people. You know how 3D usually looks like flat, just layers of flat images?
That's the way my neighbors look, actually.
Yes. Well, now it's different.
Some weird drugs.
There's depth to it. Essentially, you will be able to, if you have kids on the other side, you know, grandkids on the other side of the country, or a girlfriend on the other side of the country, you know, if you have the Vision Pro, and they have an iPhone 15, they will be able to...
See you in 3D?
You'll see them. You'll be able to include yourself at the dinner table. And now they've introduced this new
thing. And you can't overeat.
No. And they also have this, I forget what they call it now, but it's like essentially avatar. So when you're speaking to somebody, if they're on Vision Pro, they are fully represented. And you are in the same room with the same people. And the Meta product does that too. This is all pushing boundaries into wildly new places. So in other words, in the creator economy, you have people who are fluent on particular technology. They may be in India, they may be in Vermont, they may be wherever they are, but they're editors and sound designers and stuff that you can hire. Can't collaborate in the same room. You don't have that organic feel. Well, this kind of compensates for that, where if everybody has it on, you're in the same room.
Wow.
And you can be working on the same thing together as if you were in the same room.
And you actually are in two places at once when you're not anywhere at all.
Yeah. So for our elders in the audience, I'm telling you, when ambulatory isn't an option anymore and you're just stuck at home, boy, you're going to be able to go. They have immersive environments. They did something at Yellowstone. I still don't know how they did it, but they stitched this high-definition image together where you are sitting down and you can look up and you see the clouds moving. You can look down. You see the dirt around you in every direction. Plus, they have audio, spatial audio, so you have this environmental experience. So you'll literally be able to travel the world.
Wow.
I mean, that's where all this is going. And the AI thing is just taking over the industry. Like, you can now edit video with transcriptions. Like, you're doing a word edit. And it's editing all the video and sound. So you don't have to go through all this stuff where you're cutting waveforms and trying to figure out what you're talking about. It's all just a text thing. I'd use it. It's 10 times faster.
And so you edit the text and it edits the
And it automatically
audio.
Edits the video and the audio.
The video and the
And then
audio.
It spits wow. it out cut. And then... And lastly, there was one little booth. It was some Silicon Valley operation called AudioShakeAI.ai. You can take any piece of audio.
And it turns it into a milkshake.
You can eliminate, you can pull from that piece of audio anything you want. It splits it all up. For example, like us, you know how we talk over each other all the time.
We do?
You know,
it's like, nonsense.
No, we do all the time. And no one can understand what it is. Right.
Okay.
So what I could do now, I could take that piece and I could isolate both of us, and you would think we were alone in the room.
Really?
In the movie industry, they have what they call music and effects tracks, M&E tracks, where
right.
they split everything up, dialogue, sound effects,
That's
music
right.
tracks.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't have those, you can't go back and fix something. If you can't
yeah.
separate things. This AI technology separates it all
oh, my
out.
Goodness.
It'll blow out the entire post-production business. I mean, when you see all of this, you realize how game-changing it is, but you see entire industries becoming
hey,
irrelevant.
Hey, listen. I made a very lucrative and fun living doing ADR work, additional dialogue replacement. And for years, and it's a group, a loop group, they call it, mm-hmm. a bunch of very talented improvisational people, usually polyglots of some sort or another, or people who could do different kinds of accents and things. And we would go in and do movies and cartoons and television shows. And all of that is threatened by AI because they can take mm-hmm. the voices that we've done all these various actors, and replicate them.
And that was to SAG's actors' credit of holding out on the
yes.
strike last year was to attach it, because they didn't do it in 2010 because nobody knew.
No, nobody knew where it was going.
And so a lot of people lost out. So the unions really fought to...
Yeah, we had the same trouble
you know,
with cable, mm-hmm. the growth of cable, mm-hmm. when we struck many, many years ago, you know. So, yeah, it's hard to keep an eye on the future. But obviously... the future is now.
Oh, and it's the most exciting time. I mean, I've been doing sound forever, but this is by far the most interesting and exciting opportunity now. It's really a great time to be alive and working if you can do it. And
good. So we actually don't have to do this show in person anymore.
No, we could literally phone it in, so
oh,
to speak.
That's great.
So that was fun. That was interesting. And Vegas is... unbelievable. You can't even recognize the town. It's so built up. And I don't know where they think they're going to get the water. And right in the middle of it is the Trump Tower.
Really?
It's still there. And you realize, you know, there's no casino in that building.
Where's an implosion when you need it?
Yeah, I drove by it yesterday. I'm going, there's the Trump Tower. There's no casino in there. You know why?
Why? Went bankrupt.
No.
No.
No, the gaming board, the Vegas people would not allow Trump a license. They knew. When you can't even get a gambling license in
Las Vegas. How long ago was that?
Oh, when he started it.
When
he built it.
Wow.
Because of what he did in Atlantic City.
Yeah.
You know, the guy is unbelievable. He can't even get a gambling license. I mean, Vegas thinks he's too dirty.
Yeah, that says a lot. Well, now, you were talking about the 3D effects that you can get. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I ever told the story of one of my adventures in the Soviet Union with the Yale Russian Chorus back in 1959. And I got to see a 3D movie. First of all, I fell in love with this beautiful Ukrainian girl named Alla, cute little blonde. And so the only places where you could be alone or make out was in the movies, okay? So the movies were filled with young people making out, you know, and more. And so, well, and the movies were not in traditional theaters. They were in, like...
brothels.
Old hotels with folding chairs, mm-hmm. okay, and a screen. And you'd buy their tickets at a kiosk and then go to this location. And the movie that I saw was a musical about bunch of truck drivers and somebody who fell in love with the boss's daughter, called Mashina 23, Truck 23, something like that. And It was in 3D without glasses. It was some kind of a screen, I guess, that somehow created the illusion
like
of depth.
Like a prism.
Yeah, and it worked. You know, I mean, things whoo, come flying out at you, it was amazing. I've never heard anybody really talk about it.
A lot of things have been around a long time, like the SpaceX reusable rockets that dramatically land on the barges. That technology existed in the 60s.
Yeah.
They just didn't pursue it.
They didn't apply
now,
it.
Now, it might not have been nearly as easy without the computational power that we that we have now. But yeah, you know, some of these things come and go, and they've been around a long time.
Well, you know, so have we.
Yeah.
This station, it will be around for 65 years
in July. Yeah.
My birthday month. And speaking of birthdays, happy birthday to my beautiful daughter, Kristen, who turned 46 today, and she looks 26.
Yes.
I remember her birthday particularly because when I survived the Chinese Golden Dragon Massacre back in San Francisco, it was 47 years ago now, because the night that I was lying under that table while people were being killed and wounded around me, me and Peter lying under the table, I had just learned that morning that my wife Barbara was pregnant with Kristen.
Wow.
Okay, so the extra 47 years that I've been given because I wasn't wiped out in that horrible massacre have been joyful, and I've been able to spend all that time with my daughter.
You don't think about the massacre every time you see your daughter because of the date, do you? I hope not.
I bite the bullet. No.
You're listening to Phil and Ted's Sexy Boomer Show. I'm Ted Bonnet.
I'm Phil Proctor.
And you may be asking yourself, where the hell's the guest?
Yeah, where's the guest? Luna's here.
Luna's here.
I know because she just farted.
You can smell Luna.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, have they got smell audio yet? Are we there yet?
Smell-o-vision.
Yeah,
smell-o-vision. Oh, yeah, remember the scratch and sniff? John Waters did that with, was it Pink Flamingos?
I know. I used to scratch and sniff during all of his movies.
But,
yeah, so?
So what?
Oh, yeah, where's our guest?
Oh, yeah, our guest. That's right.
Yeah, we're taking a break to break in the studio.
I've been traveling a lot. It was a very busy first half of April, and we just didn't have the bandwidth, as they like to say.
So we thought it was time to interview one another.
Yeah,
we've been talking about it for years.
Yeah, we've been doing this show for 3 years, and we thought it was time to get to know each other finally.
Yeah, yeah. I know. I'm a little disappointed, but hey,
you know, whatever.
You know, it's the radio, so we'll pretend that it's
that's
going
right.
Fine.
So let's think of something else.
Wait a minute. We have guests next week.
Oh yes,
we have Jamie Alcroft and Sarah Kawahara, and possibly Hailey Kiyoko.
Their daughter,
who is a rock and roll star.
Yeah, and a lovely, lovely lady.
Well, they're all lovely people.
Yes, they really are. Jamie's been on the show before.
Jamie and I collaborated on Boomers on a Bench, a bunch of videos.
Very funny man.
Which you can Google online and enjoy. And he was, of course, best known for being a partner in Mac and Jamie.
Mm-hmm.
Very successful two-man act.
And TV show.
And they had a TV show on CBS for 2 years. Gosh, he's going to talk about it because what they did to put that show together was absolutely unbelievable.
And then he's going to bring his half-side, Sarah.
Yeah, and
who's
Sarah,
in her own right, an amazing artist.
She's an Emmy Award-winning ice choreographer.
Yeah.
She won it for the Salt Lake City opening
ceremony, yeah,
you know, which
2002
was just astonishing, you know, hundreds of people on ice, and oh my god. Anyway, she has been choreographing ice shows for the ocean liners,
yeah,
and I think she's got like 18 shows out there now. And in fact, she just had an emergency, which was that one or two of her skaters in one of the shows got sick, so they had to go around and find replacements. And because of the war in the Ukraine, a lot of these skaters are from Russia and the Ukraine.
Mm.
It's become a political problem as well.
Mm.
So they're skating on thin ice there.
They sure are.
Anyway, there'll be some wonderful stories, and you won't have to listen to us
flapping
our jaws. Yeah.
Although, when in doubt, I think we could talk about UFOs, right?
Well, unidentified flying objections. Do they exist or do they not exist? I tell you, it's so confusing. It's like my feeling about what's going on with the UFOs now is that they're admitting that they're there and then they're not admitting that they're there. Mm-hmm. You know, they say, yes, they're there, but they're ours. You know, reverse engineering, we're flying those things, you know, and or they're time travelers and they come from another dimension, you know, or they're all robots or they don't exist. You know, they're just figments of people's imaginations.
It's these tantalizing glimpses of, I mean, the reason we're getting into the subject matter is because it's been of interest to both of us.
Yes.
And not so much that we...
And we've had proof of various sorts of alien interference.
You talking about radio management?
No, I'm talking about radio is a heartbreak.
Yeah. No. In my journalism career, it always kept happening on my beat, and that's sort of how I got interested.
What's that? You mean just sightings?
UFO sightings. It was just, you know, lucky, I guess.
What years were this? 70s? 80s?
Yeah. The Hudson Valley sightings were the first of it because I was there, and that was 70. The very early part of it was like late 70s. It really kicked in by like 1982. And then there are, you know, hot spots.
And you just became curious?
Yeah. I was a child of the space age watching us go to the moon, flying saucers, Serious Business, and Project Blue Book, the paperbacks came out.
That's right.
And I was a kid, and, you know, that, as I said last week, sort of the folkloric component of the space age. Studying it over the years, you sort of learn, it's like, well, the modern UFO movement, and it's nothing new. It's been around since the beginning of time. I mean, there's all sorts of recorded history incidents.
Ah, but you see, I heard on AM Coast to Coast the other night that's the time travelers.
Oh, yeah.
They went back and they faked all of those petroglyphs and everything to make it look as if we've... Now, why they did that, it remains to be seen.
I don't know. What I look at it as is an aspect of reality, and that's what indigenous people do. They look at it as just as another interesting aspect of reality, another layer of the onion. And they don't sometimes they think they're star people. Other times they think it's an interdimensional thing. I mean, look, we have a very—
It's probably both.
We have a concept of space-time continuum that we live by right now until we figure something else out.
Yeah.
And sometimes these energetic, intelligently controlled impressions people get from this aspect of reality push those boundaries and render what we understand to be fall short. Then the whole thing starts from there and people start going off into wild conclusions, because one thing humans don't like is the notion of not having a control and not having an easy explanation so they can relax and move on. And that's what is so intriguing about the UFOs. I don't know what they are. I don't have any understanding that they're extraterrestrial or interdimensional, but I do know whatever it is does exist.
And you had some experiences at a place called the Skinwalker Ranch. People have heard of that.
Well, it's a hit series on the History Channel, I guess it is.
That's right.
It's become popularized and commercialized.
Yeah, but before that, how did you connect up with it?
I knew about it through my editorial contacts. And this will sound crazy, but when I went to Alabama, as I talked about last week, and met this individual, he wanted to prove to me that things could happen, could be requested, and things would happen. And the cop that worked down there that took me on the tour of where all these cattle were being mutilated in 1993 and was explaining all the high strangeness in this remote area of Alabama called Sand Mountain, we all became friends.
Yeah,
I was living out west already. In fact, I just moved out west. About a year or so later, the guy in Alabama who seemed to have one foot on the other side would like to tease and kind of, you know, spook you a little bit. He realized that I was camping up in the mountains in Utah a lot.
Yeah.
He said, oh, yeah, Utah. Well, maybe we can get some stuff going on over there. And I said, hey, listen, man, I'm already, you know, I'm a New Yorker. I'm camping up at 8,000 feet. I don't need any more excitement than there already is. Moose walking by me at night. And, oh, no, we're going to do something. This gentleman writes a list of things that are going to happen in the Salt Lake area. Okay.
Sightings?
Yeah. The police officer, who became my buddy as well, had this gift for finding people. The person in Alabama said, maybe find somebody in the Salt Lake area that is in a position to know if things are starting to happen, to see if it happens.
Mm-hmm.
So the police officer finds, does a little research and finds there's a newspaper reporter at one of the big dailies in Salt Lake City who has written a few articles about UFOs when he was a reporter down in Arizona. So we cold called this reporter because, you know, you say something like, hey, can we send you a list of what we think is going to happen? You know, usually they'll hang up the phone. But he was completely receptive to it.
Really?
Yeah. His name is Zach Van Eck.
Another Dutch.
Yes. And he was like, okay, thanks. So about 2 weeks later, he calls me and he said, Ted, I've crossed everything off on this list.
What does that mean? They've happened?
Yeah. He said through police reports and through people who call me because people know in Salt Lake to call me because I'm the UFO guy. And everything that was on that list was checked off.
Wow.
So he was very curious about who I was at that point. We struck up a friendship. Well, Zach, because he was always looking for new stories about UFOs, in addition to his day-to-day beat on the daily paper, went out to the Vernal, Utah area to talk to an old expert, a physics-trained junior high school science teacher, who was the local collector of information in this area of Utah, where the Skinwalker Ranch is, before it became known as the Skinwalker Ranch.
Now, what part of Utah is it located?
Near the Colorado border by Dinosaur National Park. It's about 2 hours east of Salt Lake City on Route 40. He went and saw this man, who I became friends with years later, and he had case studies. It was like that place in Alabama. It was so commonplace that everybody saw UFOs.
And this was the Skinwalker area, is what you
said? Skinwalker area. So at the end of the conversation with this school teacher, Zach said, hey, is there anything going on right now? And he said, oh, as a matter of fact, there's a couple, this family has a ranch just outside of town here. They've been having some weird things happening. And Zach said, well, can I go talk to them? He said, yeah, just go knock on their door. So Zach knocks on the door of this ranch, and there's a family there. Yeah. He's the first person that's knocked on the door. Huh. And he said,
the aliens just come down the chimney.
Oh, I understand that you've been having trouble. And so this was the family of what was Skinwalker Ranch, who had bought this ranch blindly. Huh. He just wanted to raise high-end Angus cattle. He was college-educated. He wanted to create a genetic breed that would create reliable beef for market. And he kept having only his really expensive Angus cattle.
Yeah.
They're the ones that kept getting mutilated. And they actually almost saw it happen.
What?
And when he started...
What do you mean they almost saw it happen?
Oh, well, they were haunted by lights. This family, the Shermans, were just trying to raise cattle. And they were completely blown away by what started happening at their ranch. They would sit on the porch of their ranch, and suddenly a hole would open up in the sky at night, like a camera iris.
Ooh, yeah.
And behind it was this hot air coming out like orange world, and then these giant rectangular objects would come out of it. Yes. And he had found these impressions in the soil, like big footprint impressions, rounded, and not understanding what they were from. And then he sees this thing come down and land, and that's what was making the impressions.
Was it a craft?
It was a craft. Nobody believed them.
And then what? They'd go out and have a little rectum burger or something?
One day there was a big, looked like a wolf dog near their sheep pen.
Yeah.
The dog was trying to bite at the fence to get one of the sheep. The rancher has a .357 Magnum.
Of course.
And he takes like a 20-foot shot at the dog. The dog wouldn't be frightened. Shoots the dog. Dog doesn't move.
Huh.
Still keeps doing it. Shoots him again. He sees skin fly off the thing. The dog finally turns to him. He's got red eyes and just gives him a look and slowly walks away. And the piece of flesh that came off was rancid.
Oh.
And they followed the footsteps and they vanished. This is the stuff that was happening to this family. Zach.
Did they ever take any pictures of this?
They did. They took lots of video and they had video footage. And when they started speaking
about it,
some Air Force people came from nearby Hill Air Force Base.
Oh, Men in Black.
And said, you know, can we help you with this? Can we take a look at the footage? And they gave them the footage, and of course they never saw it again.
I'll be damned.
So they were at desperate straits because their cattle were getting mutilated. They were getting the crap scared out of them. At the last point, they had light orbs, energetic light orbs. and that seemed to come at them. That Ooh. Was very frightening to them. And one, their dogs, they had like two dogs, and the dogs would go after them. And one night they took off after the light, and then he heard this horrible squeal.
Uh-oh.
And the next day, it was just too scary. They didn't want to go out. The next day, he found just a where the dogs were squealed. They just found this burn mark, a gel, like the dogs were just eviscerated energetically.
And Luna?
Like,
Luna?
Yeah, no. Luna would never go after a light orb.
Put your paws over your ears.
No worry about Luna getting
okay,
involved.
Good.
Just that was it. They had it. And Zach and another friend of mine, who there were only four investors.
Did they sell the property?
Yeah, but they decided they had to get away. And Zach and another investigator, Chris O'Brien, who's been on our show, who's written a lot about cattle mm-hmm. mutilations, and two other people were in touch with the Sherman family while they were going through it. I bought access to all of their data, and Zach and I wrote a screenplay about it.
Wow.
One of them, it was either Chris or Zach, told Robert Bigelow about it, who is the budget suites mogul who's worth billions in Las Vegas, whose grandparents had a very strong daylight encounter outside of Las Vegas in the 40s.
Huh.
So he was always interested. And so Bigelow came up and bought the ranch from them.
Huh.
And that's how it became this secretive scientific exploration.
Why did they call it Skinwalker Ranch originally?
In this part of Utah, it's in the Ute Indian Reservation. And the Ute Indians were a fearsome tribe. And when the Navajo came up from Arizona to take them on in the, I think in the 1700s or 1800s, they beat the Navajos back pretty badly.
Wow.
And the Navajos cursed, this is the story, put the curse of the Skinwalker, which is their shape-shifting spiritual being that apparently very high-level medicine men can shape-shift.
The wolf.
Well, could have been a wolf. Yeah, exactly.
The wolf.
So the family sold it to Bigelow.
Yeah.
And then Bigelow turned it around and sold it to a secret buyer in Salt Lake City who turned out to be Brandon Fugel.
What did he do with it?
He decided to continue the research and the study of the ranch, then did a television show.
Is he the one responsible for the
Skinwalker Ranch? Yeah, he's one of the reality show stars. And I really admire Brandon for what he's doing because he is trying to open it up. But let's put it this way. One of the things I've learned over the years, not only in Skinwalker Ranch studies in Utah, but also in Alabama and stuff, yes, you're right. Whatever this non-human intelligence is up to, it has a sense of humor.
Definitely.
I've seen it do things that have happened to people they've told me are just hilarious.
Yeah. Reminds me of the SNL skit.
But it's almost like they are, they're not interested in being on the nose. They're not going to land in the front lawn of the White House.
That's right.
They're not obligated to do anything of the sort.
That's right.
Of whatever this is. And I hope I have the pronouns right. But the point is that there is something at work that if you, like the Hopis taught, I know the fire sign, they taught me too, which
is... Yes, fire sign theater had...
You walk the walk of life, and if most people just hear and see, but if you learn to listen and observe and continue to do that, you will see something mm-hmm. you didn't normally see before, and then mm-hmm. you'll see it there, he said, and there, and there, and there, and all around you eventually,
mm-hmm.
basically
right.
wisdom. So this is all about observation. It's not about jumping to conclusions. It's not about predisposing yourself to a narrative you can live with and therefore write a number of books and only using the evidence that supports your theory and ignoring all the others. This is where, you know, the subject gets really
murky.
And murky. And it's a very heretical subject to discuss. It really rocks people's sense of existence. It's mm-hmm. much easier to dismiss a story that's compelling
mm-hmm.
if it makes you uncomfortable. And the UFO sightings went off the charts for two reasons in the modern UFO movement. It was in the 40s. It was the development of radar, which allowed us to see things that uh-huh. we didn't see with our naked eye. And also the space age, where we learned to look up. We didn't look up as much. We look up now.
The
we see more.
The looked up a lot more than we did.
And the reason you see UFOs...
Because they can see the stars.
Yeah. And the reason you see spikes of UFOs near big cities is just because there are more people looking
mm-hmm,
up.
Mm-hmm,
it's not because
mm-hmm.
there's more of it going on. But it's just a fascinating subject. And if you don't drink the Kool-Aid and, you know, don't obsess with it, it's a fascinating study. And there's plenty of field work you can do out there and talk to people who have no motivation or any upside to talking about their experiences.
So we're running out of time.
Yeah, we are.
No, we aren't. Let's make up some more stories.
Okay.
See, I know when we were having lunch at the Armenian sandwich shop, Ted was saying, well, what are we going to talk about? Because we already said everything. And I said, you never say everything. That's the fun of this planet. You know, there's always something new to learn, and there's always something interesting to talk about.
Yep.
You know, I noticed that our on-air sign
is working.
But it's blinking.
Yeah.
I don't know if
that's just reminding us that we're on air.
Oh, is it? I thought it was another power interruption.
No.
Another reason to send some money to the station.
Sure.
You know?
Why not?
Let's get this on so it's not blinking.
Yeah, if we could
It'd be nice if it was just like on air all the time, just like my life. Right. So I hear some music sneaking under us, which means we got to sneak out of here.
Well, you've been listening to, what is it?
Phil and Ted's Sexy Boomer Show.
I'm Ted Bonnett.
I'm Phil Proctor.
We'll be back next week with real guests.
Yes. Happy birthday, Kristen. I love you.